Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, we are about to start hour two. As a matter of fact, we're starting it right now. One more hour to go after that. I have an email here. It comes in from Kathy. She says, I am curious about the cause of sainthood for Dorothy Day. I know a little bit about her and know that she started the Catholic Worker Movement. The limited review I have done regarding the Catholic worker communities is that they have that they may have homeless shelters, and I see that they engage in some political issues. Regarding some of the political issues they support, Black Lives Matter, protesting the Enbridge pipeline, I don't know if these are causes that are supported by the Catholic Church. Given this information, I ask you, what grounds are there and what are used for the cause of sainthood for Dorothy Day? One of the prominent things that I read in her biography is that she created the Catholic Worker Movement. What is your opinion on her cause for sainthood? What is your opinion regarding the Catholic Worker Movement? Thank you. Well, Kathy, my opinion, which is solely my opinion, and others do not share my opinion, is that she may have, and the church will determine this over time, she may have shown sufficient heroic virtue for at least a time in her life, and from that point till the time that she died, that the church would judge to be worthy of being raised to the altars of canonization. And what that means is when the church beatifies somebody and then canonizes that person, is a public and universal proclamation to God's people that, A, this person is in heaven and is worthy of veneration, and also an appropriate person to whom you can turn to ask for intercession. So you ask Mary and the saints in heaven to pray for you. Some people say, well, we don't pray to Mary and the saints. We pray through them. No, that's not true. We do pray to them. We're praying to Mary. We're praying to the saints, meaning that we're addressing them with our petitions that they pray for us. That's what we mean by intercession. We're asking Our Lady and the saints to pray for us. We don't worship them. They're creatures. So we don't worship them. We don't adore them or any such thing. Those are only for God, our Creator. But we recognize that God has granted exceptional graces. And in the case of people who have cooperated with those graces and have lived lives of heroic virtue, or perhaps they died as martyrs because of hatred of the faith, there are various criteria, the church will judge that this person is worthy of those things and then canonize them. So I don't particularly know what the church has found in the case of Dorothy Day. I know that there was a time in her life prior to her deeper conversion that she did things that were not good. I understand that she had at least one abortion, but that doesn't disqualify her by any means. Now, her political philosophy, it seems, was much more to the left and much more maybe akin, if not communist, but maybe akin to some of the principles that some communists espouse. That doesn't make her a communist per se, but I just would leave it in the hands of the church and say, as this process goes on, and the evidence is brought forward, both pro and con, eventually, if she indeed did have this life of heroic virtue, then perhaps the church will canonize her, will beatify her first. We'll see what happens. Now, personally, you asked for my own opinion. I'm not drawn to her at all. Some anonymous person signed me up for the Catholic Worker many years ago. And so I received it, I think it was a monthly, it was a little newspaper, and I received the Catholic Worker for years and years and years. And I didn't particularly find it all that compelling. I mean, it seemed to be a lot of the same thing over and over again. But for some people, it's a very important part of their outlook on life. It wasn't so much for me. So I don't feel drawn to her. She's not one of those people that I avidly follow after, or I think about her or anything like that. And that's just because we're all human. We're drawn in some ways more to other people than than someone else. So that's all I chalk it up to. So as far as the Catholic worker movement itself goes, my impression, just from reading the publication when I would read it for all those years, my impression was that it's a sort of, it seems to have been maybe more politicized and more political than not. So, and that's just a perception. So I can only go on my own perceptions. So that's mine. I hope that's helpful to you. Let's go to Harold in Arizona. Good morning, Harold.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for calling my answering my call.
Sure.
Quick question. I'm in the diaconate formation, and I know as if I become a deacon, I have to serve the bishop. And we have our bishop just recently retired. We get a new bishop, and our new bishop is one of the 14 bishops that signed a letter for the LGBT group. And so I don't know if I am, that is a little, I'm feeling very uncomfortable with that because I don't agree with that. So any thoughts on that?
Well, yes, I have some thoughts on that. So the church is really clear. The Bible is really clear. St. Paul is really clear that any type of sin, and in particular, sexual sins that will lead you away from holiness, as sexual sins and other sins do, should be avoided. So it seems incoherent to me to want to celebrate something that is objectively sinful, to celebrate a lifestyle of sodomy and a lifestyle of sexual perversion and just general impurity and unchastity. Whether or not, by the way, that is committed by heterosexual people or homosexual people. In this case, we're talking about homosexual people. It seems deeply incoherent for anybody to say, I follow Jesus, I believe in the church's teachings, and yet to espouse a view that would celebrate something that the church recognizes to be sinful, whatever that sin may be. So, because the bishop of a diocese is in charge of the flock and he has authority over the flock and in a particular way over the clergy, both the presbyterate and the diaconate, I could understand why if you felt as though in your capacity as a deacon, if you were ordained, that you would be at odds with your bishop on something as momentous as this issue, I could certainly understand why you would have second thoughts and might want to wait and see. I'm not advising you necessarily to stop the process, but I can understand why you might be questioning that. And perhaps the best thing to do is to just wait and see how things play out. How much time do you have before your ostensible ordination date?
God willing, 2 years. Okay. I've been for 5 years already, and I got 2 more years to go. But do you know anything about this bishop that wrote the letter? And do you know anything about that letter?
Well, I'm aware of it, so I'm familiar in that sense. But no, I don't have deep familiarity with it. Your new bishop comes from San Diego as an auxiliary in San Diego. And I pray that he will be a wonderful, excellent bishop. I pray for all of our bishops, certainly. So I pray for him to be an excellent bishop, but I don't really know anything beyond the things I've seen in the press, bits and pieces about his life and his work in the diocese and such. Beyond that, I don't know, and I've never met him. So in this case, Harold, my advice would be maybe just let things continue, see how things develop. Certainly, you're going to have an opportunity to speak to your new bishop. I'm sure he's going to make a point of talking to the diaconal candidates at some point. So if there's an opportunity to address your concern, maybe that's the context to do that in. But I wouldn't necessarily make any hasty decisions. I would just let things go and see how they develop. You may be happily surprised. Please God,
man's
right?
Thank you, Pastor. Limitations.
That'd be my advice, Harold.
Thank you so much. God bless you. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
For everything you do.
You're welcome, Harold. Yeah. And pray. Whatever diocese you happen to be in, pray for your bishop. Good, bad, or indifferent in your view. Obviously, God has his view of things too, and our perception of reality isn't always accurate. So regardless of how you feel about any given bishop, especially if he's your bishop, pray for him. and ask God to give him all the blessings and all the courage and all the enlightenment that he needs to be a very good bishop. We should all be doing that. Let's go to Susanna in Yorba Linda, California. Good morning, Susanna.
Good morning, Mr. Madrid. You came over 2 years ago to visit at St. Martin de Porres.
Yeah, I remember that.
I don't know if you remember
that. Wonderful
parish. We took pictures with you, but it's a beautiful parish. Father Steve's leaving us, so we're kind of sad about that. And the parish continues on, but of course we're there for the Lord, right?
Yeah.
Just one question. We buried our mother 2 months ago. Actually, okay. It's going to be 3 months now, the 26th. And I have nine brothers and sisters, and they were asking for money for my mother's burial. So one of my brothers, he asked for money for a priest to do a ceremony. And so I said, well, I want a mass. He goes, no, that's too expensive. And I said, well, then I'll just get the flowers. So I got the flowers, ended up getting roses, because my mother loved red roses. And I get to the funeral, and they're asking for more money. And I said, well, I already bought the roses. I don't think I should be having to pay for a priest. It was like a priest. I was just not going to say the rosary. It was just going to be saying a few prayers. And I said, no. And then they were upset at me. And then they were somewhat rude. And I ended up just letting them know, you know, you're trying to make me feel bad. And I walked away. I didn't want to make any big thing about it.
But was this at a Catholic parish, this situation?
This is just a ceremony at the they pay for a priest to come to the funeral home, but I wanted a mass for my mother, and I said I'm willing to pay for a mass. Because we have to move the corpse and we have to do this. And I said it doesn't matter. I said I want a mass for my mother.
Let me offer you a few thoughts. I understand, and I can imagine the pain you were experiencing. So my condolences to you, Susan.
And then he should hear from my mother. Yes.
Well, here's the thing that's got me a little bit concerned is because you can have a priest from your parish, for example, come to the funeral home and be there, let's say, for the rosary. That's not uncommon. But I wonder if this was actually a priest in good standing in the diocese, or if it was maybe one of these so-called rent-a-priests who might be ex-priests. They've gone rogue, and they hang their shingle out, and they sell their services quite literally. You pay me X dollars, I'll do this. You pay that much more, I'll do that. And they just sort of rent themselves out for weddings or for funerals, things like that. Do you know whether or not this was a bona fide Catholic priest who is in good standing in the diocese? Or is it possible he was one of these rogue rent-a-priests? Because if he was, then that would explain this sort of money-grubbing demand for money to do certain things. That's not how it works. There's a sin called simony, which has to do with buying and selling or trafficking in holy things, including the sacraments, and that's strictly forbidden. You cannot charge money for a sacrament. You cannot. A priest cannot tell you, I will not celebrate Mass. I mean, if he has an obligation to do so, I'm not going to celebrate Mass for you unless you pay me $100. That's a serious sin. Now, you can give a stipend, and that's customary to give a priest a stipend, you know, $20, and it varies depending on where and when, but that's a good thing to do because he's taking time out of his day to celebrate Mass for you, but he can't demand payment. Like, sorry, I'm not going to hear your confession unless you pay me. That's forbidden. So that's why I'm wondering, is it possible that you had one of these rogue rent-a-priests instead of an actual priest? Do you happen to know one way or the other?
Well, I do know. I've seen him in one of the parishes of Booth to live up north, and I think he's a retired priest. But then the funeral home charged $450, and I ended up giving $250, and then I sent one of my brothers a text, and I said, owe $250. But then they get upset and they give me the $250 back and they said no. And I said, well, I wanted a mass for my mother. But then another thing struck me was that none of them shed a tear for my mother.
I understand. These are deep family wounds you're talking about, Susanna. Unfortunately, I'm not in a position to know what to say about those things. But I can tell you this. Obviously, this is in the past now, so you can't do anything about it. But maybe for the benefit of people listening, the funeral mass would be at your parish under the auspices of the parish, the pastor. So if a funeral home is saying, well, you want to have a rosary, you want to have a mass, you know, you have to shell out more and more and more money, that to me would be a sign that there's something that's not quite right. You can have the funeral, you can have the, rather, the rosary at the funeral home. I've been to some funeral homes and have prayed the rosary with people there. I've also done so in churches. But it sounds like there's something a little bit off, and maybe the funeral home was trying to capitalize upon your grief. And the other family divisions, of course, that made everything worse. So going forward, Susanna, I would say you can always have a mass celebrated for your mother, even if she has already been buried. May she rest in peace. You can have one mass, you can have a million masses said for her. And the benefit to her soul would be the same as if she had massive Christian burial. So it's not as though there's like a time stamp on this where, oops, she didn't have a mass on the day she was buried. She's having a mass celebrated for her a month later. It's less value. It doesn't work that way. So I realize that all other things being equal, it would have been far preferable for her to have had a mass of Christian burial. But even though that wasn't possible because of all these family problems, you can still ask your local parish priest, would you please say X number of masses, 10 masses, 5 masses, 1 mass, 100 masses for the repose of the soul of my mother? And I would like to offer you, and this is your gesture of gratitude, I would like to offer you a stipend of X dollars, and you fill in the blank. And then the priest, if he has the time to do that, he'll say, okay, thank you. And then you know that the mass has been celebrated for the repose of the soul of your mother. I should think that would bring you comfort, and I hope it will, Susanna. I really do. Well, I'm going to take a break, and we'll come back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show and your phone calls. You might get a busy signal. If you do, just hit redial, and we'll try to get you on there. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now.
All right. Good vibes here on the Patrick Madrid Show. 888-914-9149. Let's get down to Athens, Georgia, of all places, and talk to Sam. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Patrick. Automatic for the people.
Automatic, Sam. You got it.
I need some advice.
Okay.
I recently, like yesterday, had a strange message from a friend that they were sad that I had turned on them. And I was like, I haven't turned on you. I still love you as a friend. And then I got a phone call, and the person proceeded to read me off the riot act, telling me that I had stabbed them in the back, that I was mean, I'm ornery, and I never listen, and da-da-da.
I can't imagine you having one molecule of orneriness in you, Sam. You seem like the most gentle person I've ever run across.
Thank you, Patrick.
So what do you think is the source of the misunderstanding? I mean, was there a misunderstanding? Where did this come from?
Well, the person has been trying to insist that I go to an assisted living home, which I do not want to do.
Right.
And the person told me they had found me one, and that if I didn't go, they wouldn't have anything else to do with me. So I take people at their word. So I was like, fine, but I'm not going. Right. And then a week later, I got this call, which lo and behold, it was on a full moon. I got this call, and let me see how to put this. Well, I got all of that stuff, and then I sat patiently and listened, and I said, well, I'm sorry, there was a misunderstanding, and I'm sorry. And the person says, I know you're sorry. And
that's the person calling back.
Yeah, probably is, because they do listen to the show.
this is like three-dimensional radio. Now the person's, how come you're talking about me on the radio?
What it boiled down to is they said I stabbed them in the back because I wouldn't allow them as a real estate agent to sell my house.
Ah, the plot thickens. So there's money involved. And the person's trying to guilt you into doing what he or she wants you to do because there's a financial interest in the background. Is that what's going on?
Yes. And so yesterday, after a lot of thought, I texted back and I said, if I'm as mean as you say I am, I would not have sat there and listened patiently to you disrespect me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, why is it so important that you sell my house? And I got nothing but crickets.
Well, I know the answer to that question because there's a commission involved. And maybe that person's counting his or her chickens before they hatch and sort of banking on you selling your house, and she gets the commission, and now you're not selling the house and she doesn't get the commission. Maybe she's already spent it, or maybe she just really wants it. I mean, who knows? This is one of those grubby little details that can sometimes get in the way of a friendship. It doesn't sound like I'm assuming it's a she, but I really shouldn't. It doesn't sound like this person really is your friend. If this is what it takes, if this is all it takes for him or her to start badgering you because you're not coming through with the money, that's not good.
Uh-huh. Well, the thing is, the person doesn't need the money. They're a multimillionaire.
Yeah. If I were you, Sam, and I don't know anything more about this, although I do know you somewhat from our conversations over the years, I think I would just say, you know what? Thanks for, you know, kind of bringing everything out in the open. If you feel like I've stabbed you in the back, et cetera, why don't we just call it quits? Have a nice life. And then don't take that person's calls anymore. You know, block the number. You don't need to live that way. And if you are not ready to go into assisted living and it's not something that's, you know, you're not endangering yourself or other people, and I have no reason to think you are, that's your choice. And if somebody else wants some money from you because they want you to go there so they can sell your house, that's a very base mercenary motive. That's not friendship. That's exploitation. So maybe you're better off just to say, you know, have a nice life. I wish you well. I'll see you in heaven, but not before.
Yes, I think you might have a good point there. And pretty soon, hopefully this summer after my house sells, I'll no longer be Sam in Athens, but I'll be Sam in South Georgia.
Well, you'll always be Sam from Athens to me, the home of REM.
Oh, Patrick, one thing I did suggest to this person was they listen to the Joe South song, Walk a Mile in My Shoes.
Yeah. You know, you're a gentle soul, Sam, as you know, and you're friendly, and you're just a good, all-around good guy. And don't let people take advantage of you. And that kind of emotional manipulation and quite frankly, exploitation, it's, from where I stand, looks pretty shameful to me. So if I were you, I would just, pull your horns in and stop dealing with that person. I don't see a benefit to you.
Yeah. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome, Sam. All right. Well, hang in there. Automatic for the people. Power to the people.
Automatic.
All right, Sam. Take care. Yeah, that's a little... That's a little red flag, everybody. If you analyze the situation and you see that this person's trying to herd you into doing something or cajole you or wheedle you or manipulate you into something, and you see that the reason for that very likely is some financial motive, that's a red flag. So... You know, be on the lookout. That'd be my best advice. Be on the lookout. Let's go to Michael now in Silver Spring, Maryland. Good morning, Michael.
Oh, hi, Patrick. My question is about the January 6th hearings, and I'm wondering if you've been paying attention and, you know, has your opinion about Donald Trump changed any after what's come to light? I've felt that one of the things that probably got him elected was people of faith. And I was just, being a person of faith myself, I was just, my mind was boggled by the fact that people wouldn't see through things that he did to get people of faith. For example, saying, you know, that he was pro-life, which I'm also pro-life. And but just because of that, not looking at the whole picture. And so I'm just curious now if you think that people of faith are changing their minds or your actually your own opinion about it. And that's my question.
Sure. Well, I'll begin by asking you a question, Michael. Would it surprise you to know that I did not vote for Donald Trump?
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. And
but I'm assuming you're surprised to hear that.
Yes, I'm surprised and glad to hear that. And
yeah, let me continue. Now, I certainly did not vote for Joe Biden. I would never vote for a pro-abortion candidate, somebody who's avowedly in support. So just, lest anybody get the wrong idea, absolutely under no circumstances would I do that, nor did I. But I have tried very hard over the years, Michael, only because there's such a derangement that sets in very quickly on both sides when it comes to Donald Trump. And I don't fully understand the reasons why. People get extremely, extremely emotional and anger flares up very quickly. So I personally have avoided the topic as best I can. And I made a conscious decision to respond to your question just because. But the thing is, I have never been on that bandwagon. Never have been. Never been a supporter or promoter or anything like that. And amazingly, if I talk about a pro-life issue, and I'm thinking back over, let's say, the last several years, and especially, let's say, the last 5 or 6 years, if I talk about a pro-life issue, for example, some people in their irrationality, and I'm not accusing you of this, but I've seen it many times before, they leap to the conclusion that if you hold that view, that you are therefore a Donald Trump supporter. And it's simply not true. And as you yourself said, you're a pro-life person, you're a person of faith, and yet you yourself are not a supporter of his. I have some very good friends who are supporters of his. I have some good friends who are very much the opposite. So personally, I try to be apolitical as best I can. And I don't want to get dragged down into the mosh pit of, you know, how much do you hate Donald Trump or how much do you love Donald Trump? I don't care about that. And I want to be in a position to speak in an effective way to as wide an audience as possible. So have my opinions changed? My opinions are more or less as they have been. Not a fan. And I'll put it this way with regard to the January 6th hearings. On the day that this took place, I forget now, looking back on it, whether or not I was on the air that morning, or maybe it was the following morning that I was on the air, because I think it all happened after my show was over. But I denounced it very strongly. You can go back and listen to the show. I denounced it very strongly. I said this attack on the Capitol was reprehensible, And, you know, of course, we didn't have all the facts, and we had very few facts at that point. But just on the face of it, I denounced it publicly on this program. So have my opinions changed? I mean, I'm not following the hearings. It's sort of wall to wall on some networks, but I'm not avidly following it. I see the headlines, and I'll read an article here or there as time wears on. But my position today is the same as it was on January 6th and the same as it was the January 6th before that and the one before that. If somebody has committed a crime, doesn't matter who he is, doesn't matter if he's the president of the United States or, you know, the dog catcher in your local town. If somebody commits a crime and is duly convicted of the crime, that person should suffer the consequences. If somebody's innocent and falsely accused, then that should come out. So people who should be exonerated, I hope and pray will be, and those who are in fact guilty of a crime should be prosecuted and convicted and punished. So I haven't changed my view on that at all. And the way I look at it, Michael, is let the chips fall. If he committed crimes, let's get it all out in the open. And if they're punishable crimes, then let's punish them. If he didn't commit any crimes, then let's find that out too. I'm interested in truth. I'm not interested in personalities. So that's my take on it. What do you think?
Well, for me, you know, at this point, and I personally, I mean, I understand your reason for not wanting to get too much into the political, and I agree, and I think most people of faith would agree that in the end, we have to love Donald Trump. That's what we're called to do. And that's my plan and my intention. Mm-hmm. The problem that I have is that when we allow people like him to become president, the country and the world goes backwards. And the problems, all the problems that we have get compounded.
Well, I can say the same thing about Joe Biden, Michael. And I can say the same thing about Barack Obama. I can say the same thing about you take your pick. I mean, to varying degrees of better or worse, we are not going forward in a good sense in this country right now. And everything you're saying about Donald Trump could be said about, but in a different way, perhaps, about Joe Biden. So
as far as the climate goes.
What do you mean the climate?
Well, if you're paying attention, Patrick, I think you would agree that the weather and what's happening on the planet is a very big threat.
And okay, I thought you meant like the political climate, the climate of the country. If you're talking about climate change, I'm interested in what science has to say on this issue. And if science demonstrates that there is in fact man-made climate change, then let's fix it. In the subtle undertone of, you know, the sarcasm, Michael, if you're paying attention, Patrick, I'm not sure what that's supposed to mean. If you want to get a little dig in, I guess. But I want to live in a clean environment. I want clean air. I want clean water. I don't want my children and grandchildren to live in a polluted environment. I don't want to have a Miami Beach under 30 feet of water because of melting ice. Nobody wants that. So it's a really simple thing, Michael. If the science bears it out, and if it's demonstrably true that this is something that is a great threat to humanity, and a great many people think it is, and as far as I'm concerned, it may well be. I don't fight against that. I don't deny that. I say let's find out the truth, and let's act accordingly. So I'm not sure what you want me to say, but if your anger and... You know, I know you said we have to love Donald Trump. I'm happy to hear you say that. That's good. We have to love Joe Biden. We have to love Nancy Pelosi, who do some pretty despicable things, if you ask me. So there's plenty of blame to go around. But all of that notwithstanding, if the main thing that's important to you is, you know, to express your hatred or anger over a particular politician, I would say, you know, you're wasting a lot of precious time. There are more important things to do. You know, we should be cognizant of, as I said, crimes and punish them when it's appropriate to do so. We should exonerate the innocent and punish the guilty. But to get overly wound up on that because of a personality that you really like or you really don't like, I think that's a waste of time.
Well, I don't feel like, you know, it's my problem is with Donald Trump per se. It's more with what is happening to the planet and also to, you know, just all the topics, whether it's guns, you know, the environment, the hatred that's, you know, and people have been through fear, the hatred that people are expressing now that we never did before. But if I just stay on the topic of the climate, you know, I'm glad that you are looking at all the science. I am also looking at, I think, how God feels about it, because if God doesn't want us to have this planet anymore, certainly the planet can survive without us. We cannot survive without the planet. And I think God can take the planet away from us. And, you know,
One thing to be aware of is that God has already told us how this is all going to end, and it ends with everything burning. All of the elements, the heavens, the earth, everything burns, St. Peter said. And so we know how it's all going to end. We don't know what things will be like in the meantime between now and then. You know, so if you're asking me, because you did begin by asking for my opinion, if you're asking for my opinion is Foursquare. Let's take care of our planet. Let's take care of the environment. Let's not do the things that are harming the environment, and let's do the things that will protect the environment. We're like Adam and Eve in the garden, except it's no longer a garden. And we have to make the best use we can as stewards of God's creation. And we have to do it wisely and ethically, morally. I'm absolutely in favor of all those things. But where I have a problem, Michael, and I don't know if this affects your view or not, but when politicians and ideologues and plutocrats with all their money and things, when they get involved and they twist this genuine desire for clean air, clean water, etc., they twist it to try to harness people's political energies for their own purposes and even for their own gain. I have a problem with that. There are ways that we can fix these problems that are unjust, and I don't know that they would even necessarily fix the problems, but I'm not interested in an unjust solution. I'm interested in seeking a just solution. So simply because some people are jumping up and down and constantly bringing attention to climate change doesn't necessarily mean that they have our best interests at heart, nor does it mean that they have an ethical or morally upright solution to the problem. So I'm aware of that aspect of it as well.
Well, I appreciate your view on how everything is going to end, and I wasn't taking that into consideration. It just may be that we're closer to that than we know. And well, if, you know, things tend to snowball, and a lot of times people say, well, in 20 years or in 50 years, this is going to happen. And then they come back a little later and say, well, wait a minute, everything's happening so much faster because of the domino effect. And it just appears to me that we may be there. But listen, if we're people of faith, if it happens sooner than later, then I don't think we should fear it. You know, I think fear is a big part of all the problem here. And I just want to say one thing about water, because this has always puzzled me. Okay. As a Catholic, when I go into church, there's a very small bowl of water, and I dip my fingers on it, and I do the sign of the cross, and we call that holy water. And the people that we took this country from, they saw all water as sacred. And
I wish I had more time, Michael. I wish I had more time. I apologize. But you've been a very interesting and thoughtful caller. I hope you'll call me back again, please. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
I'm sensing an REM pattern here. I like it. Thank you, Thomas.
Since you mentioned the person who didn't know about this, I figured I should do some education.
Yeah, educate that guy.
Yeah.
Educate him, man. 888-914-9149. Let's see. How about Jeannie in Minnesota? Hi, Jeannie. Hello, Jeannie.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, okay, you got me. Okay. Good morning, Patrick. Let's see. Now, my son was baptized Catholic, but when he got married, he converted to the Lutheran Church. Okay. Now, which one of your Surprised by Truth books do you recommend that I give to him?
Well, I mean, there are four of them. The first one is all Protestants, and there are 11 of them who tell their stories about becoming Catholic. That has the most, the most pointed focus on Protestantism. Surprised by Truth 2 has a lot of Surprised by Truth. I'm sorry, has a lot of former Protestants, but not all. Then there's another book that was edited by Tim Drake, which I very much like. It's called There We Stood, Here We Stand. And it's a Surprised by Truth kind of book that is all about Lutherans, including a number of Lutheran ministers who became Catholic. So maybe that would be the book to start with.
What is that called again?
It's called
Surprised by Truth, Here We Stand?
No, this one is called There We Stood, Here We Stand.
Oh, There We Stood.
Yeah, There We Stood, Here We Stand. And it's a riff. It's a riff on something that Martin Luther said. So he claimed, he says, "Here I stand, I can do no other." In other words, he was saying, "I'm taking my stand on the Bible. I believe in what the Bible says, and the Bible teaches something other than what the Catholic Church teaches. So here I stand, I can do no other." So when Tim and I were talking before the book ever came out, he said he was wondering about what would be a good title and did I have any suggestions, and that I just popped off with that idea. There We Stood, Here We Stand Now as Catholics. And it stuck. He wound up going with that title. So I think it's a helpful book. I really do. And especially since your son became a Lutheran, that's going to get directly to his issues. Thanks, Jeannie. I appreciate it. Let's go now to Michael in Orange County, California. Good morning, Michael.
Hi, Patrick. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks.
So I just wanted to bring up, I think I heard it on your show, but it might have been someone else on Relevant Radio, about canonization of a skateboard saint. His name is Ignacio. In London.
Oh, I talked about him yesterday, as a matter of fact. Ignacio Echeverria. I can tell you what happened. So 5 years ago, there was a jihadist attack on London Bridge in London, right by Westminster. And these three jihadists got out of a car that they used to ram people on the bridge, and they killed a number of people. Then they got out with big knives, and they started stabbing other people. So this gentleman who was living in England, he was from Spain, he was skateboarding. And so he defended not only himself, but he defended other people who were being attacked. Eventually, he was fatally stabbed and died, which is redundant. But in any case, the fact that he was using a skateboard to block some of these blows, I think, is part of what, you know, kind of is associated with him. That's why they call him the skateboard saint. So the background is that one of the auxiliary bishops of Madrid, Spain, is promoting his cause for canonization, because now that 5 years have gone by, it's officially now possible to open the cause of canonization. So he's behind that. And people are referring to him as the skateboard saint because he died using a skateboard to fend off these assailants.
Yeah. So my question is, definitely his acts were heroic. He died a hero. But does that give him, like, what gives him the reason to be a saint? Like, was it martyrdom because they're a jihadist?
No.
Like, was he...
No.
You know, so that's what I'm getting at is, like, I don't see his martyrdom piece, and I don't see, you know, the who knows his life, or I'm definitely on the books that he died a hero. And I wish everyone was as brave as him when things happen, because then mm-hmm. less things would happen. But mm-hmm. what gives this situation him canonization rights?
As far as I can tell, really nothing. It's a popular cause. Santo subito, you'll hear in Latin, in Italian, make him a saint now. There isn't, in my view, Michael, and I'm not in charge of such things, I never will be, so this is just my own opinion from a guy with a microphone, but there's an unfortunate tendency that predates this pontificate, by the way, to very hastily canonize people. And I've been uncomfortable with it for some time. I much prefer the church's more tried and true methodology of let's wait 500 years. Let's wait 300 years. Let's let all the information come out. Let's find out exactly what this person was all about. And that, to me, seems a very wise way to go about this, because when you raise somebody to the altars of canonization, you are formally proclaiming, A, that that person is in heaven, and B, that that person is worthy of veneration and asking for intercession. And we've had a series of canonizations over the years, let's say over the last 25, 30 years, some of which, to my mind, were not warranted. I mean, at least from what I could tell. So maybe that's what you're experiencing, is you feel a sense of unease that, what is it about this guy that makes him a saint? Well, nothing I've seen thus far would make it seem that way. And if it's now going to be changed where if you die doing something to help other people, that somehow now qualifies you to be a saint, that would be something new in the life of the church. It's not the approach that the church has taken historically. So we'll see what happens. But just on the face of it, I didn't see anything in the story that suggested that he was unusual in his virtue or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think you're right at where I'm getting at is, like, I don't want to water down the sainthood, because I respect and love my saints, and they do so much for me with intercession. And so I feel like if we're just canonizing people for show, because now he's a skateboard saint, we reach out to more people, it's just going to put a divot in the respect and love and honor we have in sainthoods if they just mm-hmm. start marking people, oh, they did a good deed,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so you and I are not really involved in the process. So I do know this, Michael. When I was in one of my many visits to Rome, I had an opportunity to meet with Father Peter Gumpel. I don't know if he's still alive, but he was a Jesuit priest who worked at the Vatican in the Congregation for the Causes of Saints. And I had a meeting with him in his office that was like well over 2 hours. And he was methodically explaining to me the process of how a cause for canonization works, because we were talking specifically about the cause of canonization for Pope Pius XII, and he's involved in that cause, or at least he was. So I had a really interesting tutorial from somebody deeply involved in that process. And the one thing that was impressive to me was, at least historically, maybe not so much nowadays, but historically, the tremendous and meticulous effort that the church would go through to determine the facts of somebody's history and to find out, was this person really what people thought? Did he lead a double life? Was there something else going on that nobody knew about? So you've heard the phrase devil's advocate. Well, that's a real position in the process. It's the person whose job it is to dig up any dirt that they can and to try to disprove the claims for sanctity of a given person. And the church is historically very rigorous about that. And I would prefer to see it continue that way, but it seems that lately things have loosened up quite a bit. But there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, Michael, I've got to press on. Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go to Fabiola in Colorado. Now, is it Fabiola, as they say in Italy, or Fabiola?
Fabiola.
Welcome.
Thank you. Patrick, I was calling to get your guidance on this LGBTQIA2+ mm-hmm. topic. Right. I work at a community college, and, being that this is Pride Month, it's all over the place at school And in my work chats with my supervisor and my colleagues, everyone's, you know, putting photos and celebrating it. And I, and hearting, you know, pictures of it and things like that. And I'm not. I'm being cordial with everything else. But I don't know if I should be, like, addressing it. My supervisor in our supervision asked that I put up flyers in my workspace because I work separate in a separate space from her managing a different office. And she's like, I'm going to send you some flyers. Please put them up. And they're basically flyers that say, this is a, you know, we celebrate pride and we, this is the safe zone for you. So
we've got about a minute left, Fabiola. So I don't want you to run out of time. So did you have a question for me about that?
Yeah, I said I would put them up, but I obviously feel conflict, and I don't know if it's something I should say to her or express my position. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. And your job depends on this, right? It's possible you could lose your job, right?
Oh, yeah. If I'm not an ally, you're like an enemy.
Right. So it may come down to that, that you may have to say, I can't go along with that because I don't agree with it. And you might ask them up front, just say, do you believe in tolerance? They're going to say yes. Do you believe in diversity? Yes, we do. Absolutely. Do you believe in being non-judgmental about other people's lifestyle choices and the things that they believe? Yeah, we believe in non-judgmental. We believe in being tolerant, and we believe in being diverse. So ask all those questions right up front. Then you can say, well, good, I'm really relieved because I was worried that you were going to judge me because I don't agree with this. And I have to follow my conscience. And so I can't participate in that. But I'm really glad to know that you're tolerant and you're not going to judge me. And then see how things go. Maybe you can get through that. But ultimately, if you're not, and if you say, this is something that I can't do, then hold your head high and know that the Lord will be blessing you for taking a stand. Thank you. I'll be right back.